I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views.
Hello, this is Mike Swanson, and in a few moments, you're going to listen to another segment of Parallax Views. But before you do that, let me tell you about my new book, Why the Vietnam War. It's a sequel to my previous book called The War State, which has lots of positive reviews and Amazon's been out for years. But this one is a more detailed case study of how American empire, national security state operate using Vietnam. And I believe it shows also how things work today, how policy is actually made and why. So grab the book on Amazon.com, Why the Vietnam War.
Hey there, Parallax Views listeners. On this edition of the program, we're talking about the Texas abortion bill, the Heartbeat Act, as it's known, or SB 8. Now, a lot of people have been talking about this in terms of the longstanding pro-choice versus pro-life debate, but there's another issue that arises from the Texas Heartbeat Act. Namely, the way in which it weaponizes snitch culture, creating what are more or less secret police. And regardless of where you stand on the issue of abortion, that should concern you. And that's the view we'll be presenting on this edition of Parallax Views with guest Spike Cohen, the 2020 Libertarian Party vice presidential candidate. And in this conversation, we'll also get into the issue of how libertarians look at abortion, because a lot of people have been saying, and I think there's truth to it, that some libertarians, or a great many, have been silent on this issue. So I wanted to get Spike on because he has spoken up. Now, I of course come from the more left-wing end of the spectrum, but as you all know, I always like talking to guests whom I disagree with on a lot of things, but can find some type of common ground with on a specific issue. So with all that in mind, let's get right to the conversation with Spike Cohen on the threat of weaponized snitch culture and secret policing in light of the Texas Heartbeat Act. Welcome to Parallax Views, former nominee for Vice President of the United States for the Libertarian Party in the 2020 election, running mate of Joe Jorgensen, I should say. Spike Cohen, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Joe. Thanks for having me on, man.
So, Spike, I wanted to have you on to talk a little bit about the issue with the, I guess, Texas SB8 or the Texas Heartbeat Act. But before we get into that, maybe you could tell my listeners a little bit about yourself and your politics.
Sure. So as Joe said, I was the 2020 Libertarian candidate for vice president. My background, I started a web design company when I was in my teens. I retired from that a few years ago so I could focus full time on libertarian activism, politics, messaging, podcasting, and all of that. And that parlayed itself into my being nominated to be the vice presidential candidate last year. Since the campaign, I've been hitting the ground running, going around the country to help grow the liberty movement, not by focusing on electoral politics, but by focusing on demonstrating how libertarians care, how our solutions work, and working in communities, in cities, in counties, to show how our ideas work, fighting against injustices that are being done by people, typically, you know, marginalized and poor people and people of color in different communities, to show how the state has failed them, how Republicans and Democrats have failed them, and how the libertarian ethos of people doing best when they are most free, how it actually works, not just in theory, but in actual practice. And that's what I've been doing, and I'm happy to be on.
So I got to ask, is there a story behind your name, Spike? Because I saw that on Wikipedia, there's an interesting story behind that, and I don't know if it's true or not.
Yes, no, it's true. And that's why so many people think I'm a brony, and I'm not. I actually have friends that are bronies. I'm just not a brony myself. So when I was three, this is a very manly story, a very macho story. Keep in mind, when I'm telling you the story, I was 3 years old. I will remind you of that repeatedly as I'm saying it, because I was three. We went to see the My Little Pony movie. This was in 1985. And I think it was before the toys even came out. Like, this was when My Little Pony first came out. Again, I was three. So we went to see the movie, and Spike the Purple Dragon, I think you can watch it on YouTube now. It was, looking back, it was such a gimmick. It's like, hey, kids, watch this movie. Now you can buy the toys. But I was three. And so I'm watching this, and Spike at the very last minute, you know, turns into this giant dragon and slays the wizard or whatever. I remember, but, you know, saves the day. And I'm like, this is the best thing I've seen in all of my 3 years. And so I believe it was my brother was telling me that he was teasing me and telling me that Jeremy was a girl's name, like Julie or Jenny or whatever. And so I already like didn't want to be Jeremy. And then I'm Spike. I'm now Spike. And so I told my parents I'm Spike. And this is a very libertarian story, by the way. I'm Spike. My name's Spike. You have to call me Spike now because I'm Spike. And my parents, again, I'm three. They're like, okay, this might be a problem. They actually had me talk to a doctor, and the doctor said to them, there's nothing wrong with him. He's not crazy. He knows his legal name or real name is Jeremy. He just really wants to be called Spike. Just call him Spike. He's going to grow out of it. I'm now 39.
I like that story. So that's a great way to start out the conversation. And I want to get into, of course, this Texas heartbeat bill. And I guess we have to talk about this issue of abortion, although it's interesting for me, this bill is scary to me for a reason beyond just anyone thinks about abortion. You know, to me, it's like screaming secret police. We'll get into that later, though. What are your basic views on abortion?
So first, I'm going to tell you that the libertarian, because I don't want to be here speaking on behalf of all libertarians. The Libertarian Party's official position is basically my position, and the way it's worded, and I don't remember the exact wording, but basically we respect that there are people who have deeply held beliefs about abortion on all different sides of this debate, and that those are being held in good faith, meaning we don't think that people who are pro-choice want to murder babies, and we don't think that people who are pro-life, you know, want to control women. They legitimately think that they're doing the right thing, that they're fighting for the thing that is most important. We just believe the government should be out of it, that those things should not be, that government should not be involved in that. That's the Libertarian Party position. Now, among libertarians, the debate within libertarian circles is almost a total mirror of the American debate on abortion. So within libertarians,
Real quick, go ahead.
No,
I just wanted to note, so that's within the Libertarian Party, but I'm assuming there's a lot of libertarians or people that would identify as libertarian that aren't even necessarily part of the actual Libertarian Party, right?
Oh, most of them are. Yeah. No, I think something like 4% of registered libertarians are members of their local or state or national affiliate, which is also true of the Republican Party. Most registered Republicans aren't actual members of the GOP, same with the Democrats. But, you know, so we're not trying, which is why I'm saying we're not trying to speak on behalf of all libertarians. The debate within the libertarian world is roughly the same as within the rest of the country, although typically for different reasons. So libertarians tend to focus on, well, whose rights are being violated by what here? And that depends on where you're coming from. So I guess the pro-life, we'll call it the pro-life side, they believe that, you know, a child at either typically at conception, you know, as a zygote, or even at some point during the gestation period, that is a person, and that, you know, therefore, if you're aborting it, if you're terminating it, you're committing murder, and that's a higher concern than, you know, anything else involved there, including the mother's bodily autonomy. Whereas the pro-choice side typically says, well, no, I don't believe that there's a personhood at that point, or even if there is, you're telling another human being that they have to allow this human being to live off of them, even if they don't want to, which is a form of slavery, and therefore that's more important than the actual act happening there. And I tend to fall more on that side. But I consider myself, and I try to say, and I'm not sure if this is accurate in describing it, but I consider myself pro-life to the extent that I think that abortion is a very gruesome and regrettable practice, and that if there are ways that we can reduce abortions by addressing why they're even happening in the first place, things like lack of access to birth control, things like the fact that you, in this country, for whatever reason, you have to see a doctor and get a prescription before you can use birth control, that's something that should be over the counter. And that would reduce the number of unplanned pregnancies right there quite a bit. If you look at the fact that the vast majority of women who are getting abortions are usually already mothers. So it's not they hate babies. They probably would have had the child and raised it if there wasn't the concern of the economic concern of can we afford another child. And there's also the people, and I've actually spoken to people on the campaign trail last year who said the reason I got an abortion was because I knew people who graduated out of the foster care system because they were placed in one foster care home after another. They were never adopted because of all the red tape and adoption. And so, you know, they ended up never having a family. And I felt like it was better for this you know, fetus who has not experienced anything yet to just be aborted than to have to go through a lifetime of not having a family and having to try to navigate through that. And I wasn't in a position to be able to raise the child. These are all things that through different processes can be eliminated so that the women, the people that are pregnant that would otherwise have the child would have it or would have not gotten pregnant to begin with. I think that's way better than giving the government another thing to declare war on. The war on terror has empowered terrorists and empowered foreign dictators and the military industrial complex and made us all less safe and less secure and robbed us of our freedoms and liberties. The war on immigration has empowered human smuggling cartels and created these camps on the border and also infringed on all of our rights with these 100-mile zones that they have where people can infringe it, where the police can come and infringe on your rights for immigration purposes, even if you're an American. The war on drugs, has empowered drug cartels across the country. It led to, the opioid epidemic and everything else. Every time, and the war on poverty has entrenched people in poverty. Every time the government declares war on a thing, that thing gets exponentially worse and impossible to solve without the government getting out of it. I do not want a government war on abortion. I don't think it's going to fix anything. It's going to put a bunch of women in prison and people that tried to help them in prison get an abortion. There's going to be abortion cartels. They're going to be violent. It's going to be all the same things we see with drugs. And the CIA is going to be funding abortion cartels. Like it's not. That's what government getting involved looks like. So that's my position on it. And that's actually a large number of libertarian positions on it. But as in the rest of the country, the loudest groups are the people on the, I guess, extremes or on the most loud sides of the argument. That's that same debate within the libertarian movement. And what I keep trying to tell people is whatever you feel, whether you think abortion is a very either murder or just a regrettable, gruesome thing, or if you think it is something, a choice to be celebrated and scream from the mountaintops, at the very least, let's address the reasons why people are getting pregnant who didn't want to in the first place. And let's address the reasons why people who would have otherwise wanted to have the child are choosing not to. And let's fix those problems because the problems causing those problems are causing a bunch of other problems as well. So that's the, I guess, it's a little bit longer than an elevator pitch, but that's the, I guess, 6-minute version of the libertarian debate and where I fall on it. And
I just wanted to add SBA, that.
Go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, the thing I wanted to add is, I've come across this with conservatives and some anti-abortion libertarians. And the one thing that I get frustrated with is I think even people that are on the pro-choice end, I think people would be surprised to realize a lot of us don't actually like abortion that much. We would actually like to see abortion reduced through other means, whatever they may be. But, for various reasons, we may believe that, there needs to be bodily autonomy. But that doesn't mean we don't necessarily think it's a gruesome thing, act. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. No, there are, I met some pro-choicers who were like, it's a clump of cells. It means nothing to me. I think we should be celebrating it. I go, listen, I get it. If that's your concept, that there is no personhood there, and it's just a thing to be scraped away. And obviously in the gestation period, it starts as what even someone who wants to say that it's a person, it could describe it as a clump of cells. Like that very moment of conception, yeah, it has its own DNA, but it's not a, I mean, it's almost microscopic. You've got what, if you
cut out there for a second, you said it's almost microscopic, I think you were saying, or?
Oh, I said, yeah, I said it's almost microscopic. And I said, you know, further along gestation, you end up with a fetus that, you know, if the parents want it, they're naming it. And if there were a complication where it was birthed early, it would be viable. So, I mean, there's obviously a spectrum there and there's no real consensus on when personhood begins there. Right. So if for no other reason than that, I think it's, and again, the fact that even if we had perfect consensus that this very second is when it's not a clump of cells, it's a baby. And we all agree, every single human being in this country agrees on when it's a baby. I still think government is the last group that I would want to be involved in it. And SB8 is a perfect example of that.
Yeah. And I guess my point was more so that I think some people have cartoonish caricatures of the pro-choice side. And to be honest, I think some people have cartoonish caricatures of the pro-life side. So I do like that approach you have to it. Now, yep. Texas SB8, this Heartbeat Act, I think a lot of people are really confused about it if they've only read the headlines. My understanding is that it's an abortion ban, but the way it works is through private citizens. So how does this work?
Yeah. And, you know, as a libertarian, when we hear stuff's going to be done by private citizens, we often go, oh, hey, that sounds good. It'll be done voluntarily. No, this is the state weaponizing your neighbor by incentivizing. So here's the long and short of it. If you want to make a quick 10 grand and you live in Texas and you heard that someone got an abortion, you can snitch on them. You can snitch on them. You can sue them, basically sue them and anyone that you think was involved in helping them, including like an Uber driver who took them there. And you have a reason to think, or just want to say you have a reason to think, that you knew that they knew that they were taking someone to get an abortion, or a boyfriend that was helping them to go and get an abortion, or a friend that was taking them, or the person who performed the abortion themselves. Or if you think that, here's where it's going to be a real problem. Estranged father of the child, or someone in the family who doesn't trust the mother and they miscarried and they don't trust them. So they sue them. They sue this woman who's now grieving their miscarried child, and they're suing the doctor and they're suing the family members. And they're saying, no, this was an abortion. And you're probably listening to this thinking, well, that's ridiculous, but, you know what our court system's like. It is incentivized to punish people because everyone gets a piece of it. And now the snitch gets a piece of it too. So the police industrial complex gets their piece for the enforcement mechanism. The court system gets their piece for the enforcement. The prison system, if that comes into play, that gets their boost for one more person that's in there. And now the person who did the snitching gets 10 grand from the Texas taxpayer for snitching. This is basically weaponized snitching. And anyone, I've told people this, and I got some flack when I was on Twitter because I was like, listen, whatever you think about abortion, this is terrible. If you think that abortion is the most important thing in this country, that the very second that sperm meets egg, you have a human being that needs to be fought and defended every bit as much as any other person walking around right now. If you believe that, and you believe it for religious reasons, even if you believe that, you should still be against this bill. This bill, and I tell people this a lot in general, take the pretext out of the enforcement mechanism. Take the because of X, just make that X. Okay. So in this case, abortion is just X. Now replace X with something that you actually don't think the government should be involved in. Like, for example, gun rights. Yes. For a conservative, gun rights. Or for a lot of conservatives that are, you know, or libertarians who don't, you know, are against the war on drugs, smoking a joint. Okay. Or now smoking menthol cigarettes or vaping an unapproved cartridge or whatever. Make it that. And now use this mechanism that they've now created. They've created all the infrastructure with SBA. they can now use this. They can replicate it for anything. They don't even have to replicate it. They literally just use it and they expand it for everything else. This is like turning everyone into the Stasi from the Soviet Union, where literally everyone is, you know, there's like this network of informants who's telling on each other because they get a piece of the pie. And because it's being done through the civil court system and not the criminal court system, the it's not reasonable doubt as the bar. It's what is it? Such and such of the evidence. It's a lower bar for conviction, right? So it's just, no, this is a tier. I don't care what you think about abortion. Just make it X. You, no one wants the government to be giving out 10 grand a pop for people to snitch on everyone because they think it might be, because we know what that's going to lead to.
Well, it could get really crazy too, because like, let's say a woman has a miscarriage and then you're like, oh, maybe she had an abortion procedure done by this person. You can just report that and say, oh, these people did a procedure on her. And it's like, how do you prove that?
You know? You don't even have to know the person. That's the scary part, guys. I could just find out who's having miscarriages. I could hear that someone had a miscarriage and go, I might be able to make 10 grand off of this, because it's no skin off my back if it turns out not to be true. Right. So I can say, oh, yeah. And I can, you know, oh, that's terrible. Oh, you know, what's the name of the gynecologist? What's the name of the obstetrician? And, you know, find out who their OBGYN is, find out who they're, and just, you know, report them all. What if it's an abortion? I just got a 10 grand a pop. Right. And if it wasn't, I didn't. This is bad. And I believe, I have to double check, but I believe it's an anonymous reporting system. I may be wrong about that, but I believe it's an anonymous reporting system, which means you could just go around and like, someone who really wanted to game this thing, they could just like go through the phone book and be like, yeah, this person had abortion, this person had abortion, this person had abortion. I know it. I know they did. You got to go after them. Like, this is a terrible, terrible thing. And if anyone who thinks that government is just going to use this for abortion and not literally everything else that they can retrofit it to be used for, I submit to you the entire history of government. The Patriot Act is not just about, it was supposed to be about stopping the people who did 9/11. When was the last time you heard about, before the 11, a couple days ago, when was the last time before that you heard about Al-Qaeda or Bin Laden or the perpetrators of 9/11? They're all either dead or in Gitmo. Or missing, like the or they've been they've been promoted in the CIA and State Department. But anyway, wherever you fall in that debate, the reality is this isn't about Al-Qaeda anymore. They're using it against you. When Edward Snowden showed that the NSA was literally tracking every single thing you do on your phone and on your computer, and it's the Patriot Act and other subsequent NDAAs and other acts that gave them that authorization. It's never about what they say it's about, which incidentally, total side note, I'm just going to bring this up. This is also a big thing with the vaccine mandate. Whether you think everyone should be vaccinated, whether you think they shouldn't, whether you think it should be a choice, I don't care what you think about it. The mechanism they are using to say, if you don't do X, you aren't allowed to do this, 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 or this in a way that's never been used with vaccines before. I guarantee you, you don't want government to have that power. But anyway, back to this. SBA, I don't care what you think about abortion. This is bad.
You know, I wanted to get your thoughts on, and I know you said there's a sort of large spectrum of opinion within the libertarian movement about this, but the thing that has annoyed me is I know some libertarians that are of a religious persuasion that are treating this simply as no, abortion is bad, but I think if you're not addressing that this is creating essentially a secret police scenario, That's a problem. And I'm not asking you to, you know, punch down on those type of libertarians, but to me, it's hypocritical to ignore this secret police element.
When libertarians, in their zeal to defend a person or a thing or a right, because it's weird because the debate falls on largely the same fault lines as the national debate. But like I said, it's often for different reasons. Yes, there are libertarians who are like, listen, I am a Christian or I'm a Muslim or I'm whatever. And for religious reasons, I'm against abortion. Okay. most of the libertarians I know of anyway, who are advocate like actively and vocally pro-life, it's from a pure, it's from their perception of when personhood begins and then applying the non-aggression principle to that. So non-aggression principle, for those who don't know, this is the sort of the, I guess, the filter that libertarians put things through when we decide how we think about something from a policy or a philosophical standpoint. So we believe that you own yourself, you own your life, you own your body, you own your labor, you own your thoughts, you own the product of your labor, which is your property. And those things exclusively belong to you. You can do whatever you want with them. You can give them away. You can share them with others. You can keep them for yourself. You can sell them. You can make them into other things and whatever you want to do. All of those things are yours. No one should be able to violate your life, your rights, your property, your thoughts, your actions, as long as you aren't doing anything that violates anyone else's, you know, thoughts and actions and body and life and rights and property and so forth. That's our concept is non-aggression. And with something like abortion, it's hard for that to be cut and dry, because if you think that this zygote fetus, whatever, is a person in that moment, well then, okay, I understand and respect the bodily autonomy, but you know, but there's a human life in there. If the bodily autonomy, to many people, they say the life comes before the bodily autonomy. And all this to say, it's not as cut and dry an issue just because you're dealing with a very real bodily autonomy issue for one human being, followed by, if you believe there's a person in there, the existence of a human being in there. And that's why it's always such a passionate debate, even within libertarian circles.
I understand that, but the issue is that this is creating a sort of secret police situation.
Exactly. And so this is where, when I go to libertarians who I kind of got sidetracked there, in their zeal to defend a person or a thing or a concept, I asked them, I'm like, what do you think government's going to do with this? Like I said before, if you want to, here's a story I use very often. If abortion was against the law, if the 14th Amendment was ruled at this point, in order to overturn Roe v. Wade, the abortion, a zygote or fetus or whatever it would have to be at conception, otherwise it becomes an arbitrary thing. A child at that point at conception would have to be ruled to have the same 14th Amendment protections as you or I do. If that were to happen, I would have never been born. And here's why. My mother had multiple failed pregnancies, miscarriages, ectopic pregnancies in her effort to have a child. I was her, I want to say, seventh, give or take, pregnancy before she actually successfully had a child. Now, if those protections had been in place long before she got to pregnancy number seven, the police would be stepping in and said, no, you've created 1, 2, 3, however many human beings who didn't live. At this point, if you continue creating human beings who you know are very unlikely to die, you're committing negligent homicide, and you're not allowed to do that. Now, putting aside the horror of telling someone who's trying to have a child that, how does that get enforced? Pregnancy licenses, very, very intrusive spying and investigations, a snitching system like what they're doing with SB8. You could literally end up with a situation with a woman who, because she didn't meet whatever criteria, and the government now is going to be saying, well, if your BMI is above this, or if your blood pressure is above this, you're more likely to have a miscarriage or a failed pregnancy, and therefore you're you know, potentially committing a violent act against a constitutionally protected human being. Therefore, your BMI has to be below this before we allow you to get pregnant, or you have to. I mean, just hyper intrusive. And what's going to happen? There's going to be abortion cartels that are just going to do abortions in not the best of conditions. And they're going to fight each other over turf, just like drug cartels do, just like every other cartel does, right? Because it's not about the service, it's about the turf. So it's just going to be yet another thing that creates violence, that puts people in prison, that creates more infringements on our lives and our rights and our properties and our freedom, and our ability to be able to do things. And I'm not even talking about abortion, ability to be able to just engage in romantic relationships. And it's going to lead to a situation many times over where a woman, either because her income level was deemed too low or her BMI was deemed too high, or she'd already had too many failed pregnancies, or she just couldn't afford the cost of applying for the license, who would have otherwise had her carried her pregnancy to term, gets an illegal abortion. This is what the war on abortion would look like. It's going to, government sucks at everything it does. It is an unaccountable monopoly on violence that is enforced with threats of violence and violence and financed by theft. And you're never going to get good service or good value for that. So when they get involved in this, they're just going to ruin it and make it 1,000 times worse. So even if, again, I know your audience tends to lean more progressive, so there's probably not a lot of pro-lifers watching this, but even if you are the most stringent pro-lifer ever be conceived and birthed, that you know that at the very, for either religious or secular reasons, that you believe that at the very moment that egg meets sperm and that process begins, we've got a human being who needs to be protected every bit as much as you and me. This is a bad way to do it. Government will ruin it. Government's going to screw it up. And some of you are probably, well, if you're pro-life, you're going to go, well, I guess you're saying government doesn't do a good job with murders or abortions either. Yeah. Or murders or rapes either. Yeah. No, I am. The vast majority of murders go unsolved. In many major metro areas, there is as much as a 5, 6, or 7 year backlog on processing rape kits, while police are spending billions of dollars in some cities to put the newest military equipment on to prosecute the war on drugs, because that's where the money is. Yes, government sucks at everything it does. And no, the vast, vast majority of acts of abortion are not some woman waking up and going, what terror can I inflict on this child inside of me? They're trying to figure this out. They're making what is usually a very, very difficult choice, usually an economic-based choice, which is disgusting when you think of all the things that government does. From the Federal Reserve to taxation to zoning laws to civil asset forfeiture to the war on drugs to overcriminalization, to all the things that basically entrench so many people in being permanently poor and marginalized, that it's actually an economic reason they're not having the child very often, or that they weren't able to get access to birth control very often. They're not doing it because they hate the child or because they're a murderer. They're making a choice that if we looked at the reasons why they're making those choices, we could greatly reduce the number of abortions without getting government involved and having them ruin everything.
If we could, I want to talk a little bit about the snitch culture element of this, because
yes.
I know that you and I think Muddied Waters podcast talked yes. mm-hmm. a lot about this. What are some of the specific ways in which we could see nightmare scenarios coming out of this snitch culture sort of being created through this bill?
We can just limit it to abortion and talk about all the nightmares. We talked about the abortion, the miscarriage thing. You hear someone had a miscarriage, or you know someone close. It could be two things. Either someone close to you had a miscarriage and you just don't trust her. There's always been, I don't think that's true. And I might get 10 grand out of this, right? And so you go and you drop the dime on them. Turns out it was just a miscarriage. And now this woman and her loved ones, who are mourning a child that they'd already been buying clothes for, and they already had the name picked out, and they may have already done a gender reveal. Some terrible thing happened, right? And they're mourning it. And to them, it is a person. And they're sad and they're miserable. And they're having to try to, and now the police are coming to their house. They're being told that they're having a lawsuit served to them. And now they have to prove in court with a preponderance of the evidence threshold, not a reason beyond a reasonable doubt threshold, but a preponderance of the evidence threshold, having to prove that they didn't have an abortion when they themselves weren't keeping all this information to make sure whatever. And so they're in court. And how many people are going to settle out of court because they just don't want to have to go through the court process? Because you know the backlog there's going to be on this. So many people are going to be suing. There are going to be people having to sit and wait for months, maybe years, to find out if a court is going to tell them that the child that they're still mourning, if they're legally responsible for its death, so that some schmuck can get 10 grand out of it. That's just with abortion. Now apply this to everything. Apply this to telling for every single person in this country, knowing that if they snitch on someone, they could get 5 grand, 10 grand, 20 grand. I'm sure it would be different levels for different rewards for different levels of whatever. Everyone, and now keep in mind, once it's like that big, now everyone's getting sued. So now you're like, hey, oh, you're going to sue me? I'm going to sue you. Oh, you sued me for smoking a joint? I'm suing you for jaywalking. Like, you're going to end up where everyone is acting like the gigantic hall monitor, tattletale, HOA, Stasi, whatever. Like, they're just the worst people. If for no other reason than to try to recoup the losses from all their being sued for stuff. And if you don't think for a second government will do this, again, I submit to you the entire human history of government, okay? We don't even have to look at other governments. You know, people, everyone wants to talk about Nazi Germany. Everyone, and as a Jew, it can be somewhat offensive sometimes when people are like, you know, this is just like the Holocaust. Like, no, it's not. But we don't have to look at foreign governments. This government committed genocides. This government right now locks people up in cages for trying to come here and commit and apply for asylum. Okay. This country right now is working with the Saudi government and Al Qaeda to engage a genocide against the people of Yemen, which has killed close to 1 million people at this point, including hundreds of thousands of children. If you don't think government will create a Stasi system here for snitches, then you're wrong.
This is another thing I wanted to get into because I know. Within libertarian circles, which I used to be more of a libertarian myself, I moved a little bit to the left, but okay. You know, I still think libertarians can often share things in common with people like me. War on drugs, oh, yeah. I'm against that. War on terror, I think, is horrible. But with mm-hmm. libertarians, I think there's often a debate about, you know, well, we don't like the federal government, so should we be all in on, you know, states' rights? And I think there's a libertarian critique to be made of giving individual states too much power as well.
Yeah. So first of all, and I correct everyone when they, and I'm not correcting you because you're using the term they're doing, but when someone says states' rights, I say states don't have rights. People have rights. States have powers. So it bothers me, not just from a semantic standpoint, but states don't have rights. States aren't people. States are organizations of people who get into buildings and write on sheets of paper and use it as a threat that is enforced by people that they have you pay their salaries to go around and make sure you do that thing. So no, they don't have rights. They have powers, and we have rights that are being routinely, in ways large and small, every single day, infringed upon openly by those states, from everything from the local government, county government, state government, federal government. By the way, yes, I am an anarchist. So that's going to be reflected in how I think about this. The Libertarian Party is a wide spectrum of different beliefs that fall within the NAP, the non-aggression principle.
So right. Well, there's like minarchists and there's anarchists. Yeah, yeah.
Minarchists, anarchists, you got constitutionalists, you've got, you know, all different people. And I'm fine with us being in alliance because right now we've got a government that's running. I'm fine aligning with progressives who want to end wars and end the war on drugs and criminal justice reform, police reform, you know, possibly looking at abolishing state policing and going with like a community-based policing model. Like, there's so many things we can work on with so many people. But from a libertarian philosophical standpoint, if we are to have a government, I don't care as much about what level of government something is happening at. Although I think in general, it's better for government to be as local as possible, typically speaking, because it's typically going to be more accountable. It's easier to talk to your mayor or your, especially if we're also kind of decentralizing some of these large cities. But even in a large city, it's easier to be able to talk to your mayor than to the governor, much less the president, right? So it's typically better to have it more local. But if there is a city government that is infringing on our lives, our rights, our property, our labor, or whatever, and the federal government comes in and stops them from doing it, I am perfectly fine with that. Conversely, if a city or county or state wants to introduce an immigration sanctuary or a victimless crime sanctuary bill or a Second Amendment sanctuary or a whatever sanctuary, nullifying the federal diktat that is violating our lives, our rights, our property, our body, our labor, and so forth, then I'm fine with that. I actually think it's preferable if we are to have a government for their primary role to be fighting each other constantly and arguing with each other constantly, because the more bothered they are, I don't like, you know, when the government needs to work together. No, I want government to be constantly arguing with each other, because the more they argue with each other and are, you know, constantly at loggerheads at everything, the less likely they are to be bothering us. So no, if a state government does that, so if the federal government is successfully able to stop SB8, good. For whatever reason, good. And there are libertarians that go, but the state should be. No, the person should be able to do what they need to do. And the state is getting involved in anyone who wants to stop them. So unless you want to go and have a private armed rebellion against the state, right now your best and most peaceful shot is the federal government stopping them. And I don't have a problem with that.
So I got to ask, I think Biden has commented on this Texas abortion law and has said, you know, basically this is crazy. It's deputizing private citizens. Is this the one case where libertarians may be in agreement, or at least libertarians like yourself?
From what I haven't read every single thing Joe Biden has said or done about this. Everything I've read, I'm like, yeah, no, he's right. Now, I could sit there and, you know, being a libertarian, be like, well, here's how you're a hypocrite because you're against it on this, but here's how you're doing it on all these things. But everything he has said about abortion that I've heard anyway, he may have said something I don't agree with, but in terms of like what SB8 is, yeah, no, he's right. He's right. This is deputizing people to snitch on everyone. And there's a reason
say real quick, you know, I don't know if you ever saw this when you were in maybe high school or something, but like I've known girls when I was in high school that ended up getting abortions because they, you know, their parents paid for it because, oh my God, you know, this girl of mine isn't going to have a life if she has a kid now and all this.
It's going to ruin her life. Yeah.
Well, but think about like, you know, what if there's like some teacher that's like, well, this is an easy 10,000. Like,
it's endless. It is.
It's a Pandora's box.
It is. And again, even if it was only limited to abortion, it would be a nightmare in actual practice, right? And we know it's not going to be. This is like, and yes, it's a Pandora's box is a great way to describe it, man, because you are literally creating this thing that the government's going to go, oh man, we literally just have to give people a few grand and they'll just go and act as our enforcement arm everywhere. And we can just use the civil court system. Side note here, civil asset forfeiture, for those who don't know, is where the government, the police typically, it's sometimes federal agents, but usually it's the police. If for whatever reason they decide you got too much money, your car, whatever, and they can frame you up good enough to you know, charge you with, you know, committing a crime, they can take your stuff. And even if by some miracle, after being robbed of all your stuff, you're still able to defend yourself in court or the charges get dropped or whatever, now if you want your stuff back, you got to fight them in court to get your stuff back, even if it was already just proven that you didn't do the thing that you were accused of. Now, why do they call it civil asset forfeiture? Which incidentally, civil asset forfeiture, if you add up all the money that has been taken from people, most of whom were not ever convicted of anything by local, state, and federal governments, it and add that and put up the number of the amount of confirmed burglary, private sector theft, civil asset forfeiture is markedly higher than private sector theft is lower than, I'm not even talking, because you know, taxation is also a form of theft and extortion. Just civil asset forfeiture is outranking private theft. But do you know why they call it civil asset forfeiture? Because they don't use the criminal court system. They use the civil system. So even if a criminal court goes, no, he didn't do that, or we're not even, you know, the judge throws out the charges or whatever, there's a chance that the civil court will go, yeah, there's enough evidence for you to keep his money.
So,
and they're weaponizing the civil system for this thing. Yeah.
Well, that's what I wanted to get into before we start closing out is, you know, people will say, oh, well, this involves private citizens. And I think that was basically the Supreme Court argument. But like, ultimately, you know, and I think if you're a libertarian, right, you know, you don't like the military industrial complex as a libertarian. You think to yourself, oh, they're working with the state. Well, now, you know, take that to this level with the Texas SB8. Yeah, these people are basically becoming arms of the state now. We shouldn't like that either.
They are arms of the state. So applying this to the war on terror, imagine if instead of, you know, having the military industrial complex, one day they're like, you know what? Screw Northrop Grumman, screw Boeing, screw these, you know, we don't need to give them trillions of dollars anymore. Let's just like pay people to go and rack up massive body counts overseas. And we'll not really keep much oversight of who they're killing, just as long as they're killing people so we can tell the American people how many terrorists, quote unquote, we've killed. Yeah, that's this applied to abortion. It's,
well, people always say like, oh, well, those, you know, Northrop Grumman is a private company, but it's in an unholy alliance with the state. So it's this, that's the comparison I'm drawing.
Murray Rothbard, one of the most well-known right libertarians, okay, and I consider myself at least to some extent Rothbardian, anarcho-capitalist, whatever. I put it this way, I lean quite a bit on the things that Rothbard has written about the nature of the state. Later on, he went kind of weird. I don't support late Rothbard, but the early Rothbard was good stuff. Murray Rothbard himself, and I think it was actually Northrop Grumman or Raytheon. Well, I think he was. This was before Raytheon existed, but I think it was Northrop Grumman. He actually used them as an example of saying they're not a private company and they don't have any rights to their property. And he was actually talking about in a post-state society, you know, that you could arguably just dismantle all that and give it to the a combination of the victims of their weaponry and the victims of who was taxed by it, because it's, they certainly have no legitimate ownership to it. But the point is, the second that you are working with the state in any capacity, but especially in like an enforcement capacity, to whatever extent you are doing that, you are no longer a private citizen, or at least acting in a private capacity on that one thing. So police officers, they aren't like, they don't have a tag on their head. They're not owned by the government. They're employees of the government. So are they private citizens? No, because they're employees of the government. Anytime they're doing something as a police officer, they're not private sector. Now, if they're just out with their family having a burger, yeah, they're doing private stuff then. But all of us are public or government to the extent that we're working with the government. You know, when social media is you know, we now for a long time we were told social media was largely just acting out of its own desire to police its own. And in the last couple of years, we've seen that at least some of it has been guided by the Atlantic Council. And then a couple of months ago, Joe Biden just straight up said, like, we're telling Facebook and other social media companies to get rid of, you know, certain things that we're deeming to be misinformation. Now, whatever you think about that misinformation, the point is the government is telling a private company to do it. When the private company does that, they are not acting as a private company on that one thing. They're acting as an enforcement mechanism of the state. SB 8 does that with every single, potentially every single person in Texas.
Yeah, I mean, I like the way you put it. This is just really, really bad. I don't know how else you can put it. And like I said, for me, I think the debate needs to be reframed. I mean, this, as we have been sort of pounding this point home, it's really not even about abortion. Regardless of what you think about abortion, this is about, you know, secret police. Very, very bad. You don't want Stasi if you're a libertarian.
This, you don't want Stasi if you're anyone, right? So I was very, so when this first came, and then especially after the Supreme Court punted and said, well, there's not any enforcement from the state, and we don't even know if any private person's going to do this, so no one has any standing. What an absolute dodge. I hope they revisit that, because my God, this will be a terrible bill if it's not struck down in some manner by the Justice Department, through the Supreme Court, whatever it has to, or it through the voters of Texas, you know, which unfortunately I don't see that happening, because I don't think the voters of Texas are going to look at this in time and be like, all right, we need to just go blue just to stop that. I don't think they're going to do it for political reasons. They're going to remain red for all the other stuff that they like from Republicans, just the general. So at the state level, I don't see it happening. But if it stays in place, this is going to be an absolute nightmare. And it's one of those things, like, I can only yell this is bad as much as I can. But I was somewhat jaded when I heard that the Supreme Court they punted, and I thought, watch. Everyone's going to fall into their typical camps and argue about abortion instead of the freaking, like you said, Pandora's box that's being presented to be opened in this case, which has nothing to do with abortion and everything to do with the snitching weaponization system that they want to create. And I've been actually fairly happy that for the most part, people are focusing on that part. There's certainly people talking about, because it's still obviously related to abortion, and it is an abortion bill, so that's going to come up. But I am happy to see that a lot of people were like, you know what, I support a ban on abortion, but this is a bad way to do it. I'm like, yes, thank you. Okay, well, we can have the abortion conversation later. This is bad, and it needs to not, because nothing is more permanent than a temporary government program, right? So, you know, they implement this, give it a year or two, and it doesn't matter how much you hate the damn thing, it's not going away. Like, this will become how things are done. And what a nightmare if this goes in. This is bad. This is arguably one of the worst potential things we've seen come out of government. And it is not private. It is relying on people to act as public or government financed informants.
I was going to ask, and I guess you just answered it for me. Have you had any luck discussing this with libertarians who may be more against abortion? It sounds like you have had a little bit of luck on that.
Yeah, it's within the Libertarian Party. We're almost, now I'm not going to say, you know, we're 100% in lockstep, but even a lot of the pro-life libertarians are like, this is bad. This is not the way to do it. And now, thankfully, this also opens up a discussion for me going, okay, no, you're right. This isn't the way to do it. How are they going to do it? Like, okay, they get rid of this. How are they going to do it? Because it's going to take something like this. But anyway, whatever. I'm willing to have that conversation later. Let's just agree to not freaking give government this nightmare. But I also, so I try to talk at least as much to what I call normies or normal people, or, and that's sort of like within libertarian circles, we joke about how like we're not normal. There's something off about us. And so I'm like, you know, I'm going to go talk to normal people now. And so, you know, this would be an example of talking with normal people. I try to talk to non-libertarians at least as much as I'm talking to libertarians, because there's nothing I'm going to tell libertarians on a day-to-day basis that they don't already mostly agree on. Yes, I want to rally the troops. Yes, I want to get them excited for, you know, growing the movement, but none of that means anything if we just keep talking to each other. So I try to spend a lot of time on shows like this, on even, you know, conservative talk radio, progressive talk radio, doing panels, you know, with wide varieties of people across the political spectrum. And in those circles, in the last couple of weeks talking about this, I would say even in like, you know, in the more conservative circles, once they know, a lot of them don't know. So they're not being told this in their right-wing media spheres, because they'd be like, wait a second, this like empowers the government that we're stockpiling weapons against. This isn't good. So they're just focusing on the abortion part. But a lot of them either already did know and are seeing that, or they're finding out and going, yeah, no, that's the wrong way to do it. So no, I try not to get optimistic when it comes to government. I do believe that this is not going to happen. I think it's going to be struck down or removed, or something's going to happen, because this isn't workable. Like
even in Texas,
something legitimate.
Even in Texas, it seems like a large portion of the population there, perhaps even a majority, looks at this and it's like, well, this goes too far.
Yeah, no, the majority of Texans are against this. Whether it's enough for them to vote Democrat long enough to get them to, probably not. But the majority of Texans are like, this is bad. I mean, put it this way, every Texan I've talked to was against it. And I talked to libertarians, progressives, conservatives. I talked to a lot of Texans, and they are all against it. This is a bad thing. And it was done poorly. And I hope two things happen. Number one, obviously, I hope it never actually gets implemented, and we learn a lesson on not allowing that. Number two, this opens a discussion later on, once we've all gotten this done. Let's not start fights now. But later on, we can have a discussion about, all right, let's say you think government should be stopping abortions. We agree this was the wrong way to do it. How are they going to do it? I like to talk to people about process, because may not get you to agree with me philosophically on questions like, for example, healthcare. If you brought me on to talk about healthcare, you'd probably be shocked and surprised to discover we agree more than you think we might. Okay. Not just on like, we need to be getting the government protections of corporate profit that make it so expensive need to be removed. We need to have, if we're going to call it free market, it needs to actually be a free market. And then whether we have a taxpayer funded system, a patient funded system, or some hybrid between, it'll be a lot more affordable and there'll be a lot more access. You'd be surprised how much we're going to agree. But the point I'm making here is that I would much rather talk with you about process than argue with you about whether healthcare is a right or not. Like, okay, let's say healthcare is a right. How do we do it? Like, neither one of us thinks that people should be denied healthcare, right? Like, we think healthcare should be something that people can easily get and not have to worry about it ruining them financially. So let's talk about process of how to actually do that. Same thing with, you know, pro-lifers, pro-choicers, whatever. We all largely agree that we want for there to, most of us anyway, for there to be as few abortions as possible and to get rid of the conditions that would make someone who wants to be a mother to choose to have an abortion, or someone who didn't want to get pregnant to never get pregnant in the first place. So let's focus on that process instead of allowing government to create a mechanism by relying on your emotional tie to this subject to end up infringing on you and everyone else and making everything worse in the process.
So last thing I wanted to say here in this, I mean, my initial reaction to this Texas heartbeat bill was like, I hate hall monitors. Even, I'm a progressive, but I even hate, there are like these liberal and even left of center just hall monitor types. Like everywhere, even with like COVID stuff, like I'm fine with wearing a mask. I think people should get the vaccine. That's just me. But like people who have to act like hall monitors about it, where it's like, well, are you wearing your mask today? Like, leave me alone. Like,
yes. You
know, but like, if you're just hall monitoring to make yourself feel better. And, you know, honestly, I remember the kids in the playground used to say the old line, snitches get stitches and buried in ditches. Now, it's a little bit too violent for me. But, you know, whatever happened to like, I mean, we used to not
that
like
also
snitches.
Happens. That. Yeah. Well, so what were, I remember being told as a kid, no one likes a tattletale. And I'm like, but I thought you told me if something bad's happening, then to tell. And it took them like explaining, yeah, no, if someone's hurting you or something like that, that's whatever. But if you just see someone doing something that they're not supposed to do, like, don't come to me with that. What am I supposed to do with that? Right. Like, so, you know, my thing is, first of all, as a libertarian, I want government as little involved in my life and everyone else's life as possible, because the government is usually the police, and the police want to go home. They want to show up, they want to do their job, and they want to go home because they're human beings and that's what they want to do. And if they've got to do some stuff that they might not like to make sure that you don't give them a hard time to get home, they're going to do it. And that means that the more interactions that you have between police and people and non-police, you know, the civilians, the rest of us, between police and everyone else, the more likely you are to have bad things happen, because A, they just want to get home, B, they can, and C, even if they're bad actors, thanks to qualified immunity and other protections for them, they're just not going to be held accountable. The thin blue line is going to close around them and make sure that they're as insulated as possible. You know, even someone who literally stood or kneeled on someone's neck for 9 minutes with a smirk on his face while other police officers are walking up and saying, he doesn't have a pulse, he's dying. And he's literally just kneeling on him like, well, let me just make sure he's dead. There was still a question whether he'd be convicted or not. If you or I did that, there would be no question. They wouldn't even continue covering it to be like, look at this terrible thing they did. You know, they've been arrested. We know what's going to happen. It wouldn't even have to be covered, right? I want as little of that as possible. When you snitch, you're making that happen. So what I will say to you is, if you are one of my dear friends who are hall monitor adjacent or hall monitor-esque, that's fine. If you think that someone's hurting someone, so you think someone's going to commit murder, you think someone's going to commit rape, or you think they have done that, you think someone's hurt someone or is going to hurt someone, then I understand, or someone's, you think someone's going to hurt you. I understand, at least now we live I'm an anarchist, but we live in a government system. And typically, often the best way to deal with that is to go to the police, especially if you're someone that doesn't believe in, you know, personal armament and self-defense, you're not armed and something bad's going to happen. It's probably best to go to that, right? Don't do it for everything. Like, I don't even want to get into the whole, like, no one likes the tattletale thing, but there's a reason no one likes the tattletale, because it just, you're creating interactions that aren't necessary. Like, if you see someone who's going around, I'll apply it to masks. If you see someone, they're going around and they're being obnoxious and they're getting in people's faces and they're coughing and they're whatever. Okay, I get it. Like, I get that. Okay, whatever you feel like you need to do, I get that. If you see someone who's largely keeping their distance from other people and they're not wearing a mask, for all you know, they could have either some kind of situation I've talked to doctors about this. There are people who a lot of people with PTSD, a lot of people with claustrophobia, a lot of people with other psychological trauma, wearing the mask actually bothers them. It could be that, you don't know. It could be something like, it could be something like, there could be like an obstructive issue. They could have like an asthma issue, and no, a surgical mask isn't going to be too much of a problem. But if you see someone in a wheelchair, I saw someone in a wheelchair recently, not wearing a mask, and they had oxygen. And I saw people looking disapprovingly at this poor lady. And I'm like, do you not get why she doesn't have a mask on. Like, this is... Well, go ahead.
I was going to say, to be fair, I've seen the opposite too, which freaks me out just as much, which is like, I don't know if you've ever seen this, but I've seen this here where I'm at in Pittsburgh, is people that like are really against masks and they will get mad at you for wearing it. I'm thinking to myself, why can't you just leave people alone?
And leave people alone.
Both sort of sides of the culture war do this thing where they think they are the morally righteous person and they have to attack everyone who isn't doing what they think they should be doing in public, even if it's not harming anyone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And trust me, there are a few, more than a few, in the libertarian movement. They're like, I don't want them wearing that. You're just enabling the safety theater. And I'm like, listen, if someone feels comfortable wearing a mask, if someone, they might be immunocompromised, they might, you know, whatever reason, they might literally just be like, hey, you know what? I think I'd be fine, but I don't want to be asymptomatic and spreading to others. Whatever their reason, if they're just doing it because it's the mandate, just leave them alone. Like, let them make that choice. If you want to, you know, refuse to comply, then refuse to comply. Leave them alone. Like, that would be like giving someone a hard time for not smoking a joint or something like that and being like, well, look, it's against the law. He's helping enforce the war on drugs. No, he's just doing his thing or her thing. Leave them alone. Like, I'm very much a leave people alone thing. Last year, when I would take, there was a brief period of time where it didn't matter. If my face, if there was a picture of my face, someone was getting pissed off because either I wasn't wearing a mask and there would be people pissed off that I wasn't wearing a mask, or I was wearing a mask, usually in like either inside of a building where I was specifically asked to wear a mask. That was usually my threshold. If the property owner was like, we want you to wear a mask, like at the convention, they asked in outside of the convention hall itself, they asked in like the hotel to wear a mask. So we typically were wearing our masks. Although towards the end, it kind of all fell apart, but regardless, or on an airplane where I don't care who you are, they're going to make you wear the mask. And all that's going to happen if you refuse, and I've seen it happen, is they kick you off the flight. You're never going to fly again, or at least not for quite some time, not just with them, but with any other major airline. Now there's the federal thing. They're going to possibly prosecute you. And everyone on that plane is angry at you because you're holding up the flight. They want to get to their connecting flights. They don't miss whatever their thing is. So leave people alone. Let them do their thing.
So the moral of the story here for everyone is don't be super snitch 3000. Leave people the hell alone and, probably relax and maybe smoke a J if you're thinking about being super snitch, because you'll have second thoughts after you have a joint. But in closing, I needed to ask you just real, real quick. I know I keep going over time. Have you dealt with, I get the impression you've dealt with shadow banning, because I could barely find you on Twitter when I searched for you, except when I searched for you on Google.
That's interesting. I actually have largely not. I've been fact-checked a couple times. My favorite fact-check, I think actually twice I've been fact-checked. My favorite fact-check was John Brennan, who used to be the head of the, was it NSA or FBI or CIA? I forget which one he was. But he said, the Biden administration is going to be looking at many different groups for potentially being domestic terrorists, including, and he named a bunch of people like white.
It was CIA, by the way. He was CIA.
Head of CIA. Okay. And he named all these different like terrible groups. And then he said, and libertarians. I'm like, what? So I put up a joke post and tweet where I said, the silver lining to the Biden administration labeling libertarians terrorists is that the CIA is going to give us trucks and guns and money. And so And everyone realized this was a joke, as evidenced by all the people going, ha, 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 LOL, and laugh reacting it. I get a call from like, or an email from like fact check, whatever, one of the fact checking things. And they're like, we saw this thing. Do you have any evidence that Joe Biden has labeled libertarians terrorists? And I'm like, no, because that's why it was a joke. And I got contacted by two of them. One of them labeled it satire. The other one labeled it as partially false. And the reason they labeled it as partially false was because I told them, I said, listen, if you're not going to call it, because they're like, well, you don't have proof of this. I'm like, it's a joke. I said, but if you're going to label this false, you have to acknowledge the fact that it is true that the CIA gives money and guns and money and guns and training to terrorist groups. And so I have a partially false fact check from whoever it was. And the reason that, and they said partially false because the CIA does have a history of arming terrorists. So I was willing to take the fact check for them to admit that.
I'm amazed by all this big tech stuff, because I've even ran up against problems. Like I'll write movie reviews on my social media sometimes. And I reviewed this one like terrible 70s horror comedy. It was like, or terrible. It was from the 2000s, but it was like one of those ripoffs of Scary Movie. And okay. It had jokes in it about Vince Foster and his death. And I mentioned Vince Foster, the Vince Foster joke by name in the review. And I guess that triggered the algorithms, because people couldn't see the review after that. Like it would not allow you to search for it and all this other stuff.
Wow.
I'm thinking to myself, I'm not even supporting the Vince Foster conspiracy theories.
You just meant, yes.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So I mean, I think everyone, including people that are very much to the left of things, should probably think about how bad big tech is, because ain't working out for me, and I don't think it's working out for anyone else.
I will say this, and I've said this to people on the left. I'm like, if you think for a second, you know, go talk to your local, you know, friendly neighborhood Antifa person, or if you're aligned with Antifa, talk to some of the other Antifa people. They get banned all the time. They get shadow banned all the time. They get blocked all the time. They get IP banned all the time. If you are outside of the, you know, the Overton window of basically allowable opinion, within, you know, what is sort of this like weird neoliberal, neoconservative, centrist, somewhat center left, somewhat center right, but very high up on the authoritarian scale. If you fall outside of that corporate media and government approved, you know, Overton window, the further outside of that you go, the more likely you are to get banned. And yeah, that's going to mean that like Proud Boys and white nationalists and stuff like that are going to get banned. It means you're going to get banned too if you're outside of this. And if you're all just sitting there, I've literally watched them like
make they'll come for the tankies too.
They're coming for everyone, not just the tankies. They're going to come for anti-fascists. They're going to come for they're going to come for tankies. And a lot of us will be like, well, I'm not a huge fan of tankies, so that's fine. And I'm not a huge fan of white nationalists. I don't like white nationalists either. But guess where this is headed? They're going to do it to you too. And yeah, it means that if you put up something, you know, what's happened a lot with COVID is someone will put up a theory about the vaccines, which later gets proven true. And then, or about COVID or about whatever. So for example, I know people that put up and said, well, as these variants start to mutate, there's a good likelihood that the vaccines are going to become less and less effective. And so we're probably going to need booster shots. I know someone who was IP banned for that. Not only were they banned, but their IP address, they can't start an account. They aren't able to open an account on Facebook. It's true. Now, he said it 7 months ago as a theory, but it's true. Like they're already talking about a third booster shot, and they're saying that the Delta variant already was making it far less effective in stopping you from getting it and spreading it. It's obviously still keeping you out, more likely keeping you out of the hospital, but it's eventually going to not be as effective in keeping you out of the hospital. And so there's probably going to be booster shots. And he literally just said this, and he's been banned from the internet. So no, I mean, the big tech stuff is concerning, guys. Like I even if it's happening often to people you don't like, they'll throw that at you real quick.
I just checked shadowban.eu. I put your Twitter in. It says that you have a search suggestion ban. So
really?
They want to look into that. I don't know. Anyway,
that's interesting. Yeah. No. I the last thing I was gonna say, I got an email recently informing me that the German that someone in Germany had reported me. And it was on a post that I did about civil disobedience and how effective civil disobedience can be, in certain cases. And Twitter informed me due to German law, they had to inform me that it had happened and that they had ruled that I hadn't infringed on that I hadn't violated that rule. And I'm like, and I thought the irony of a German reporting a Jew for talking about resisting government edicts. That was, and the Schadenfreude of them not being successful. So anyway, no, big tech is something to be, you know, it is something to be concerned about, and it's not a private act, not a wholly private action. But I know we've gone way over, but I really appreciate you having me on and talking about
this.
Well,
I wanted to give you a chance. How can my listeners keep up with your work and all your commentary? And I'm assuming you'll be bitching about SB8 for a while.
Well, first of all, don't search for me in Europe, apparently. So my shows are The Muddy Waters of Freedom and My Fellow Americans. And those are on Muddied Waters Media. That is
you just had R.A. the Rugged Man on your show too, by the way.
Yeah, I had R.A. the Rugged Man on. Yeah. Yeah. And I've got some other rappers that are going to be coming up. That opened a whole box of rappers that have been following me who are like, why don't we have me on? And I'm like, I didn't know you were following me. Yeah, let's
I'm a huge R.A. fan, so I'm going to have to listen to that episode after this.
It's good, man. It's really good. We went into a bunch of stuff. He was good. I just let him go off. But Muddied Waters Media, that's on all social media platforms. It's on all podcasting platforms. And it's on muddiedwatersmedia.com. And that's muddied, like muddied, not muddy. If you just want to follow my personal political stuff that I'm doing, I'm Spike Cohen. And you can apparently everywhere but Europe, you can find me anywhere if you look for Spike Cohen. I'm on Facebook, I'm on YouTube, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram, I'm on TikTok for the kids. And if you go to spikecohen.com, all my stuff is there, including any upcoming events I have. If I'm going to be in your area, come on out. I love answering questions. I love meeting people. Any questions you have, feel free to come and ask them. And ask them in the comments and tweets if you see something you want to ask a question. I can't reach every comment or tweet, but I go through occasionally and try to answer any questions anyone has. So hopefully I can get to it. And like I said, man, I really appreciate you having me on and talking about this. I hope we can all agree that, you know, creating a massive snitch weaponization system is bad, and we need to drop all of any disagreements we have and just fight and end this.
Well, that does it for this edition of Parallax Views. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Spike Cohen. And be sure to check out his podcast, My Fellow Americans, which is part of the Muddied Waters Media Network. And as always, if you can, please, please, please consider supporting me on Patreon at patreon.com/ParallaxViews. That's patreon.com/ParallaxViews. $1, $5, $10, and $15 tiers. Any amount will help. I could really, really use your support. You are what keeps this show going. And it's been a rough year for me. I'm trying to keep it all together. Your support will greatly benefit not only me, but hopefully the show itself. I think that the more contributions I get on a monthly basis, the easier it will be to continue this on a full-time basis. In any case, I just posted some archived editions of past Parallax Views programs on the Patreon page at the $5 and above tiers. And also at the $10 and $15 tiers, as you all know, you get a producer's credit shout-out, which leads us to producer's credit shout-outs to Mark, Arlen, Spartacus, Gunner, Ed, Gratz, James, Jamie, Mickey, Brian, The War Nerd, Emilia, Chase, Orc, Black Tuna, Catherine, Nathan, Holland, Martin, Brian S., and Jeffrey. If you'd like very own producer's credit on each and every edition of the program, then like those listeners, kick in a $10 or $15 monthly donation on Patreon, and you will get your very own producer's credit on each and every edition of the program. So support me at patreon.com/ParallaxViews. That's patreon.com/ParallaxViews. And if you can't do that, no problem. Just support the show by getting the word out there. Like, comment, subscribe, tell your friends about the podcast. Get the show out there. It helps me out, and I really appreciate it. Stay safe. And with that being said,
until next time, you've been listening to Parallax Views with Parallax Views. To Parallax Views with Parallax Views.
The way out is not simply to say don't do it, just to prohibit. It's nothing else. If we don't do it, others will be doing it like crazy. So, you know, we have to confront the problem. But no, basically, I know of the great anxieties, problems, new forms of control, but it's also new forms of freedom. This is why I always emphasize that internet and all this new digital stuff. It's a very ambiguous phenomenon, but it's the field of struggle. New forms of enslavement, but at the same time, new incredible forms of freedom. We have to accept the fight with no nostalgia for old, allegedly more authentic communities or whatever. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.